A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
concentrate
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 356. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Dark Side of the Sun. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Yes, welcome back for the second part of our discussion about this 1983 BBC serial that combined a conspiracy theory, psychic powers, and the gorgeous sunny scenery of the Greek island of Rhodes. Lots of attractive features for this series. This was a about 1 hour episode. I think there are some of them are a little bit under the 1 hour mark, Brian. On DVD since 2015, and as I say, it originally came from 1983.
Yes, and it has some pretty dark themes in it, with a conspiracy of politicians and bankers and maybe other business people, and this sinister historical order, and some evil supernatural powers and things sort of stretching across time and involving telepathy and all sorts of strange things.
Yeah, quite a lot going on in this one, actually, for 6 episodes.
There really is. And I am going to give a spoiler warning here, specifically for episode 1. We'll maybe spoil a little bit more later, but to start with now, I will say that the initial main character in the series, this professional photographer, well-respected professional photographer, Don Tierney, he dies under mysterious circumstances at the end of episode 1. And it is up to his wife, now his widow, Anne Tierney, to pick up where her husband left off. And she is also a professional photographer who seems to be rapidly gaining some recognition for her own skills in that area. And she is planning to complete her husband's last work, which is this photo book for the island of Rhodes, this Greek island where this drama is set.
And of course, she journeys to Rhodes for this, meets some of the people who knew her husband on the island. In particular, she makes friends with David Bascom and Ismini Christianis, who we mentioned in our last episode. She is finding some of Don's photos that were still in the shop being developed. And of course, remarkably, to give this show its supernatural theme, she is seeing her husband everywhere, not only in the photographs that she takes herself, but he appears to her in visions from time to time. So although the character seems to be killed off at the end of episode 1, that's not the last we see as Patrick Moa, who I think makes an appearance in every episode, I guess, Brian.
Yes, I think that's right. And there are often sort of fleeting glimpses that help add sort of a spooky sense to this, that you will see him standing there in Anne Tierney's eyes, maybe across the street, and then when she looks back, he's gone. And there are these sort of fleeting moments, or she'll look at a stack of photos and he'll be in every one, then come back to those same photos, the same prints afterwards, and he isn't there. So there are these sort of moments of seeing him and then not seeing him.
Absolutely, yes. Interesting stuff. As you say, particularly those initial just flashes, which almost seem like, you know, possibly the common experience for anybody who's lost somebody dear to them, where you think suddenly you see them and you look again and they're not there. But as you say, Brian, as it goes, the show progresses, they become more and more real to her. Anyway, on the island, she is being enticed into the oh-so-charming and glamorous world of Raoul Lavalier, the villain of the piece. We mentioned last time, I think it's a fairly, shall I say, it's a fairly familiar trope for TV and film, this idea of old paintings that strongly resemble the leading woman or the leading man. And here we have both. And of course, Lavalier sees great significance in the fact that one of his ancestors looked so much like him, and that the woman he was in love with so looks so much like Anne Tierney.
Yes, that is sort of a theme of this, and something that is quite mysterious, and there are these ties to the past that are very important to this show. And while all of those things are happening, we also see these senior politicians and bankers and business people showing up to the island, to Rhodes, where you would not expect them to be, to meet Lavalier and to work with him.
Yes, the plot, whatever's going on in the background, which these very important people traveling to the island and meeting up, whatever's happening is happening in the background, behind the story of Anne and the death of her husband.
Yeah, there are sort of a number of elements and a number of things going on at once, which is quite nice in this, I think. But let's focus on some of those supernatural themes, because they are kind of interesting. Anne and the psychiatrist, Ismini, both have some form of telepathy, maybe some form of psychic ability of different sorts. And Ismini is using that to help Anne and also to help David Bascom through their torments and through everything that's going on. And, you know, trying to move forward on these things. And Don Tierney's ghost keeps appearing to Anne. He keeps showing up.
Yes, he does. And as we've suggested, the brief flashes in the first few episodes become more and more real to her and more long-lasting, to the point where Don is appearing in her bedroom at night. And not to put too fine a point on it, Brian, she is sleeping with the ghost of her dead husband, or at least she believes she is. It's fairly clear to us, the viewer, because of sort of changed angle camera reveals, that what she's actually doing is sleeping with Lavalier, who's using his own powers to, I suppose we could say seduce her, we could say sexually assault her, Brian. I mean, oh, you know, it's obviously not a graphic show, but that is the implication, I believe.
Yes, I think that definitely is the implication. And, you know, this is something that gradually comes into this as the sort of strange elements of this are revealed, that some of that is going on. And I think it was pretty reasonably handled. But yeah, there are definitely some intense things going on here.
Yes, and I should add perhaps a little content note that not only is there the implied sort of non-consensual sex between Lavalier and Anne, but there's also Anne has developed some unfortunate mental health issues as a result of her bereavement, and in fact spends some time in hospital before deciding to take up and continue her husband's work on Rhodes. So there are some slightly troubling issues about the way her character is both portrayed and also dealt with, just to warn people.
Yes, this is not a show that has a great deal of violence or sort of graphic imagery, but the ideas in it are quite strong and get into some things that are kind of unpleasant and disturbing, but definitely some interesting things there. And there is also, in addition to some of those things that Lavalier is doing, he seems to have this power for dealing with people who cross him, dealing with intruders on his estate, dealing with spies and so on. And we have sort of an introductory moment in this serial where that happens, and effectively he makes someone's greatest fear appear to them, and it drives them to either do something like driving off the edge of a cliff or simply having a heart attack. But he ends up causing these illusions that lead to the death of someone who is against him, or that he perceives as against him.
And it is quite nicely handled on screen, the way that's depicted. And we get these flashing images of a demonic face, the demon Asmodeus. and we see characters running scared and very disturbed from the castle. There's a sort of almost like a Bond pre-credit sequence to episode one where we see a thief has broken into the castle and he gets this sort of treatment. That gives us the idea of some of the powers that are inside this castle.
Yes, and we see that with Dawn Tierney. That's what happens to him at the end of the first episode. And David Bascom, there's something similar that happens there. So this is a recurring thing that we see with people clearly experiencing their greatest fears. And usually it happens while the person is driving a vehicle or something like that, and things go very wrong. And we do see this imagery of the demonic face of Asmodeus involved in that too. So there is something quite sort of rich and complicated in these layers and the different things happening here.
And just to give you an interesting historical note that I picked up doing some of my research for this show, the Knights Templars, or the Knights Templar, and one of the things they did was to keep the mummified heads of their previous leaders in their castle. So they venerated these former masters and kept their heads in the castles. But of course, this led to local rumors and superstitions that they worshipped images of demons. And it was apparently one of the arguments used against the order when they were denounced, and then the order was dissolved by Pope Clement V. So, history stuff there, Brian.
Yes, clearly this was written with an eye on some of the history as well, which is quite nice.
Now, we've mentioned before that Raoul Lavalliere is a very almost Bond-like villain. He has got some secret plan that's going on. He's getting all these important people coming to his castle. He has something going on. Colonel von Reitz is helping him with this. But as well as a Bond villain, possibly because earlier this year, Brian, we considered another Bond villain, Louis Jourdan, in the role of Count Dracula, I did notice perhaps how much he might also owe to the sort of idea of Dracula. Sometimes when he's dressed up in his full regalia, an evening dress with the medallion, he has the castle, he has a portrait of a desired woman, he makes nightly visits to her bedroom and has some strange mental powers to confuse the minds of others. There's a bit of the Count to him as well, isn't there, Brian?
Yes, I think there is. He is clearly not a vampire. It's not that mythos.
No.
But the character of Count Dracula, yeah, I think there's a big influence there, especially when you're thinking about Bram Stoker's novel. That, you know, a sort of more original take on Count Dracula rather than the more monstrous one that was introduced in the monster movies of the 30s. But in terms of that original character and the one that we saw in the drama, in the television Count Dracula, yeah, I think there's some influence there. And I think it was used pretty well. There are other elements to this character, and I don't think he's a ripoff of Count Dracula or a copy of him. But I think the influence of that character was used pretty well.
Interesting stuff. The bad guy model, Bond or Dracula.
Yes. So I think it's time to get into some of our own thoughts here. So, Eamon, what did you like about The Dark Side of the Sun?
Well, shall we start with how this 1983 show looks? And I think for a BBC show from the early 80s, it actually looks great. The sun, the sea, the lovely Greek settings, you know, they've splashed out on taking the production to Rhodes. And I think that was money well spent, because it does look pretty good, I think. What about you? What did you think of the look and feel of this series?
Okay, there's a lot that I liked about this series. I really enjoyed it. But the look of it is outstanding. I agree that Rhodes looks great. I think the direction in it and the cinematography are much better than I would expect for a BBC serial from the early 80s. I think they're very good indeed. So yeah, I think this looks fantastic. And you have moments like the moment where Dawn Tierney sees Lavalliere as their cars pass each other and they sort of glimpse each other in passing. And that moment was really well done. And you have lots of moments like that that give you a lot of tension and are sort of quite powerful in some cases and have, you know, lots of depth and doing sort of interesting things. So the direction and cinematography, I think, looks great. And Rhodes itself also looks great. They really used the fact that they were there and used it to good effect and gave it this sort of spooky and troubling kind of feel to it that was not in darkness and shadow but was in bright sunlight, and I think that worked really well.
Excellent stuff. What did you feel about the writing of this show, with things like the dialogue and so on?
I thought the dialogue was quite strong, actually, but more than that even, I would say the story and the different things going on. They have a number of different characters in here, all with very distinct voices and distinct personalities. And you have this thread of things going on with the sort of conspiracy stuff being done with these international figures, with bankers and politicians and so on. And then you have the supernatural things with the telepathy and the sort of ways that he is attacking people from afar and doing these sorts of different things, and the investigations into the telepathic phenomena and these sorts of things that Ismini and Anne and even David are involved in. And then as a third thing, you have sort of the historical elements with looking back to, you know, what are Lavalliere's origins really, and you know, how does he relate to this history, and what is there built up in these things from the past that might affect these characters in the future. So there's a lot going on, and I really like that. I enjoyed all of these different elements, so I like the writing a lot for, you know, multiple reasons.
Okay, great stuff. We've got some good performances. We've got Patrick Mower as Dawn Tierney, Peter Egan playing a very sort of memorable, sophisticated villain. Michael Sheard is a delight whenever he turns up on screen in anything. What about yourself? What did you think of the performances here?
I thought the performances were all solid. I thought the standout would have to be Peter Egan as the villain, and it's, you know, a pretty juicy role to get to play, in the same way that the traditional version, you know, the novel version of Dracula is a great part. And, you know, in any version of Dracula, it's hard for any role to compete with that. And it's a bit like that with Lavalliere here. I enjoyed having Ismini and David Bascom in there. I thought they were very nice performances, and certainly Dawn Tierney was as well. There wasn't quite as much for Anne Tierney to do, although she was the central character for most of it. There wasn't quite as much for her to actively do, but I quite liked some of the sort of subtleties and some of the things she did with it. So I was pretty happy with that.
Okay. I mean, that was, as you know, Brian, one of my slight disappointments with this show. I thought when they took the very brave move of killing off Patrick Mower's character at the end of episode one and then bringing his wife to the island, I thought, oh, this is going to be really interesting for a 1980s show. It's going to have the female protagonist take over the investigation and the action. But unfortunately, I felt things happened to her and she was, you know, quite passive a lot of the time, which is a shame. I would hope that she'd have been a bit more dynamic in, you know, the mystery that was going on. But anyway, that was one of my slight reservations about it.
Yeah, and I think looking into the, you know, we're getting into the negatives here, the negative points we have on this. I did like her performance. I thought the way that she sort of dealt with the situation and some of the things she does do in it, I thought were interesting, and I thought the performance was fine. What they did not do is what Survivors did almost a decade earlier with the character of Abby Grant, where she sort of steps out from the background, so to speak, from being a very calm and privileged character and sort of steps out into this new world and steps up to the plate and takes control and gets things done. And in the last series of Survivor, Series 3, they did some similar things with the character of Jenny Richards. So those were sort of interesting things with that they didn't quite get to here. And it would have been nice to see them do that rather than it being David and Ismini sort of saying, you know, okay, this is where we have to go, and her sort of taking that on. I think interesting things happen to her. We see interesting things in the performance, I thought. But yeah, she doesn't take agency and take control of the situation as much as we might have hoped.
And I mean, it's not Emily Richards' performance. I think that's fine. I just think she, as you say, Brian, as you said earlier, she's not really given enough to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think the way this ends, and I don't want to give away the whole ending, but we have something where she is in a very unfortunate situation and is doing something rather strange that is actually taking control of the situation. And I thought that was interesting and was sort of a good moment for her, although it has some problems as well. But I thought that was sort of an interesting twist. And she did have some moments that I liked, but there weren't enough of them.
Okay. And the ending is very interesting. You know, we can't really talk about it because we don't like to spoil things, but it is... There's some thinking to be done about the ending, isn't there, Brian? I think we can say that.
Yes, definitely. It's very much an open-ended piece where the things that the main villain is doing and sort of the main story is all resolved. But there is a significant thread, a significant piece there which remains. And Anne Tierney is... in this sort of very difficult situation with some of these mental health problems and so on. And yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on with that ending, which is both something that's a bit uncomfortable, but also something that is kind of fascinating and does some interesting things too. So maybe there are some things that are a bit dated in this in terms of how the main female character is treated and is used in the story. I think that would probably be done a little bit differently now. But there are also some things that I like a lot with that character. So it is sort of a bit of a contradictory mix for that one element of things with her character for me.
Okay. I mean, back in the positives, we'll also mention the music by X Carcos, which I think is lovely. And I did like the fact that they obviously used, you know, Greek actors. We have David Bascom's character, who speaks Greek fluently and is fully integrated on the island. Maybe, as I say, that's Michael J. Bird's own, you know, himself, writing himself into these series. I am quite interested, actually, to go back and look at some of his other series from this Mediterranean quartet, particularly the Aphrodite Inheritance, which I might have to snap up before the DVD goes out of print, Brian.
Yes, there are definitely some interesting things in here, for sure. And yeah, there's a lot that I liked in this. There really is. And yeah, the whole... look and feel and the sound of it is pretty distinct. It isn't like that many other things, and it works very well. And, you know, most of the writing and a lot of the performances, it all works really well for me.
Would it, I mean, you mentioned what might be changed if it was made now. Do you think it would be a more snappy, zippy four-parter now than a slightly drawn-out six-parter?
If they were doing it now, yeah, it probably would be. Or it would be two two-hour parts or something like that. And for me, that would be a bit of a disappointment. I like it that it had that time to go through this. Because there was so much happening, I think that extra time of having, you know, nearly 6 hours, it let us enjoy that look and feel. It gave them a bit of time to show the island and that sort of thing. So that was something I like, that they had the amount of time that they did. Although if it were being done now, you're right, it probably would be shorter.
Regular and long-time listeners will probably be familiar. They'll know that I like shows to get on with. And Brian, you much prefer shows that have time to breathe and develop. Historical British invaders, differences.
That is something you will notice, yes.
I should also mention, sadly, that another DVD that appears to have become deleted since we put it on our list. We do like to cover shows that are available for our listeners to track down if they want to. And sadly, unfortunately, we have to put a mark in the negative column because at the moment, very expensive and difficult to find.
Yes, as of fall 2020, it appears to be no longer easily available. And we're hoping that will change, that they'll reprint the DVD that had already been released. So when you're listening to this, check that out if you're not sure, because maybe it will be available again. That's what we're hoping for.
And just to give something away, hasten to the Facebook group for British Invaders after this episode, because there may be a copy turning up for sale for a good charitable cause.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I think we should move to our recommendations now.
Excellent. Do you want to kick this one off, Brian? Shall I throw it to you first?
Okay, I can start this. I am going to put aside the fact that the DVD is currently out of print, because this is something that could easily come back into print with the same DVD, the same release. So I'm hoping that will happen. So putting that aside, I will recommend this. I really enjoyed it. I think the visuals of it, the sort of look and feel, is really very good. And the layers of things going on with the story and the characters are really strong. About the only thing for me that counts against it is that the central female character is not dealt with quite as well as I would hope, but the actor still gets to do some nice things in the performance, and there are still plenty of nice things for that character. So yes, this is a show that I really enjoyed, and I definitely would recommend it.
Okay. I do like that we find these shows for this podcast, Brian, that we've perhaps never heard of before, and we find, you know, turn up some gems. It is quite unlike, I think, most of the shows we've covered. So I would say, if you can get it reasonably cheaply, then I would also recommend The Dark Side of the Sun. It's a show that I've become sort of much fonder about as we've done our research and talked about it, Brian. So I'm going to give a cautious recommendation. If you can find a copy for a reasonable price, give it a go. And if it ever turns up on BritBox, somebody give us a shout.
Yes, or even on iTunes or something like that.
Yeah.
So, in summary, The Dark Side of the Sun introduces us to Dawn Tierney and Anne Tierney, a married couple, both of them professional photographers. He is highly acclaimed as this war photographer. She is starting to become more recognized and more acclaimed. And he goes off to the Greek island of Rhodes to work on this project to create a book of photographs of the island of Rhodes, and is learning about the culture. He's waiting for his wife Anne to come and join him, and he comes across this apparent conspiracy of these politicians and bankers and businessmen meeting in secret on this beach on Rhodes, where you wouldn't expect them to be, and something seems to be going on. And he tries to visit the estate, the castle of this character Lavalliere, and is not allowed in, and is under strange circumstances, sort of driven away and to his death. And from the second episode, we have his wife and Tierney stepping into the spotlight. And David Bascom and Ismini, this psychiatrist who is also psychic, as is Anne, it seems. And both have these sort of telepathic powers. And we end up in this sort of subtle game of chess against the villain Lavalier, and, you know, lots of conversations and lots of sort of psychic things being used as weapons against people. And we start to learn about these connections that Lavalier has to the past and to the Knights Templar, and questions about how Anne fits into that, with a painting that appears to resemble her quite strongly that is very old. And this brings us to a strong conclusion that will leave some interesting things open, with some things implied for where this could go beyond the series.
A fascinating show, one I'm glad we've discovered. If you have watched it, or if you would recommend The Aphrodite Inheritance to us, please do drop by the Facebook group and let us know.
Yes, absolutely. This was a big surprise for me, this show, so I'd love to hear what other people think about it, especially if you remember it from the time.
Excellent stuff. And, of course, please come and join us next time. It's finally, we've got to the show that we've probably been asked about or had requested more than any other show, Brian. It's time for ITV's The Avengers. Now, it's a huge show, so we've decided to break it up into manageable chunks. If you're waiting for Emma Peel, you'll have to wait a little bit longer, because we're going to start with the series 1-3, which we're calling the early years, Brian.
Yes, and this, along with Patrick McNee as John Steed, this gives us Ian Hendry as David Keel and Honor Blackman as Kathy Gale, and a few others too. But those are the main characters we're going to be looking at for the Avengers, the early years. And we won't be getting into later parts of the Avengers immediately after. That will be a little bit later that we come to that.
However, even in those first three series, there's lots to talk about next time.
There certainly is. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group where we have lots of discussions going on there.
Absolutely. And do come and join us and join all the fun on the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at VogNetwork.com, where British Invaders is a proud member.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for joining us, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.